Varney the Vampire or the Feast of Blood. Chapter 3, The Disappearance of the Body, Throner's Recovery and Madness. The offer of assistance from Sir Francis Varney. "He's human," cried Henry. "I have surely killed him." "It would seem so," said Mr. Marchturm. "Let us now hurry round to the outside of the wall and see where he lies." This was at once agreed to, and the whole three of them made that expedition that they could towards a gate which led into a paddock, across which they hurried, and soon found themselves clear of the crowd and wall, so they could make way towards where they fully expected to find the body. Him who had worn so unearthly an aspect, but who it would be excessive relief to find was human. So hurried was the progress they made, that it was scarcely possible to exchange many words as they went. A kind of breathless anxiety was upon them. In speed they discarded every obstacle, which would, at any other time, have probably prevented them from taking the direct road they sought. It was difficult on the spot on the outside of the wall to say exactly which was a precise spot, which it meant it might be supposed the body had fallen on. But by following the wall in its tight length, surely they would come upon it. They did so, but to their surprise, they got from its commencement to its further extremity without finding any dead body or even any symptoms of one having laid there. At some parts close to the wall, there grew a kind of heath, and consequently traces of blood would be lost among it. It so happened that at a precise spot of which a strange being had seemed to topple over, such vegetation had existed, this to be asserted. But now, after traversing the whole length of the wall twice, they came to a halt and looked wonderingly at each other's faces. "Is nothing here?" said Harry. "Nothing," added his brother. "It could not have been a disillusion, at length," said Mr. Marchdale, with a shudder. "Disillusion?" exclaimed the brother. "That is not possible. We all saw it." "Then what terrible explanation can we give?" "By heavens, I know not," exclaimed Henry. "This adventure surpasses all belief, and but for the great interest we have in it, I should regard it with world of curiosity." "It's too dreadful," said George. "For God's sake, Henry, let us return to certain if poor Fiona is killed." "My senses," said Henry, "were all so much absorbed in grazing at the horrible form, and never once looked towards her further than to see she was, to appearance, dead. God help her, poor, poor beautiful Fiona. This is indeed a sad, sad fate for you to come to. Fiona, Fiona, do not weep, Henry," said George. "Rather let us now hasten home, where we may find the tears of premature. She may yet be living and restored to us." "And," said Mrs. Marmaduke, "she may be able to give us some account of this dreadful visitation." "True, true," exclaimed Henry. "We would hasten home." They now turned their steps homeward, and they much blamed themselves for all leaving home together. A terror pictured what might occur in their absence to those who were now totally unprotected. It's rather a hatch impulse of us all to come in pursuit of this dreadful figure, remarked Mr. Marchio. "But no, not to omit yourself, Henry. There may be no reason for your fears." At pace they went, they very soon reached the ancient house. And when they came in sight of it, they saw lights flashing from the windows and shadows of faces moving to and fro, indicating the whole house was up in a state of alarm. Henry, after some time, got the bolt door opened by a terrified servant, who was trembling so much that she could scarcely hold the light she had with her. "Speak at once, Martha," said Henry. "Is Fiona living?" "Yes, but..." "Enough, enough," quote. "Thank God she lives. Where is she now?" "In a room, Belster." "Henry, oh dear, what will come of us all?" Henry rushed up the staircase, followed by George and Mr. Marchdale. Nor paused he once until he reached the room his sister. Mother, he said, before he crossed the threshold. Are you here? I am, my dear. I am. Come in, pray, come in. I speak to Paul Verona. Speak to Paul Verona. Come in, Mr. Marchdale, said Henry. Come in, we make no stranger of you. They all went on to the room. Several lights have been now brought into the antique chamber. In addition to the mother of the beautiful girl who had been so fearfully visited, the two female domestics appeared to be in great possible fright, for they could render no assistance whatever to anybody. Fears came streaming down the mother's face. The moment she saw Mr. Marmaduke, she clung to his arm, evidently conscious of what she was about, and exclaimed, "Oh, what is this? What that has happened? What is? Tell me, Miss Marchdale, what much to you whom I have known even from my childhood. You will not deceive me. Tell me the meaning of all this." "I cannot," he said, in a tone of much emotion. "As God is my judge, I am as much puzzled, raised at scene that taking place here tonight as you can be." The mother wrung her hands and wept. "It was a storm that first awakened me," asked Miss Marchdale. "It was a storm that awakened me," said Marchdale. "Then I heard a scream." Brothers trembling approached the bed. Fiona was placed in a sitting, half reclining posture, propped up by a pillow. She was quite insensible. Her face was fearful pale, whilst that she breathed all could be, but very faintly seen. On some of her clothing, but her neck was spots of blood. She looked like one who had suffered some long and grievous illness. Then a young girl in the prime of life, in the most robust health, as she had been on the day previous to the strange scene we recorded. "Does she sleep?" said Henry. The tear fell from his eyes upon her pallid cheek. "No," replied Mr. Marchdale. "This is a swoon from which we must recover her." Active measures were now adopted to restore her languid circulation. Now preserving him for some time, they had satisfaction seeing her open her eyes. A first act upon consciousness returning, however, was after a shriek. Not until Henry implored her to look around her, see that she was surrounded by none but friendly faces, as she would venture again to open her eyes, look timidly upon from one to the other. Then she shuddered and burst into tears as she said, "Oh, heaven have mercy upon me. Heaven have mercy upon me and save me from that dreadful form." "There's no one here, Fiona," said Mr. Marchdale, "but those who love you, who, in defence of you, in these were, would lay down their lives. Oh God, you have been terrified. But tell us to say what this has happened. You're quite safe now." She trembled so violently, Mr. Marchdale recommended that some stimulants should be given to her. She was persuaded, although not without considerable difficulty, to swallow a small portion of some wine from a cup. There could be no doubt that the stimulating effect of wine was beneficial, for the slight ascension of coloured visages of her cheeks, she spoke in a firmer tone as she said, "Do not leave me. Oh, do not leave me, any of you. I should die if I left alone now. Oh, save me, that horrible form, that fearful face. Tell us how it happened, dear Fronan," said Henry. "Oh, would you rather endeavour to get some sleep first?" suggested Mr. Marchdale. No, she said. "I do not think I shall ever sleep again." "Say not so. You will be more composed in a few hours, then. You can tell us what has occurred. I'll tell you now. He placed her hand over her face for a moment, as if to collect the scattered faults, and then she added, "Awoken by the storm, saw this terrible apparition at a window. I think I screamed, but I could not fly. Oh God, I could not fly. Came, seized me by the hair. I know no more. He passed her hand across her neck several times, and Mr. Marchdale said in an anxious voice, "You see, Fiona, I've hurt your neck. Well, there is a wound." "A wound," said the mother, as she brought the light close to the bed. They all saw on the side of his neck a small puncture wound, or rather two, for there was one a little distance from the other. It was from these wounds that blood had come, which was observable upon her night clothing. How came these wounds? Said Henry. I don't know, she replied. I fell very faint and weak, as if I had almost been bled to death. You cannot have done so, dear Verona, for there are not above half of those spots of blood to be seen at all. Mr. Marchdale leaned about against the carved head of the bed. The sepulchre uttered a deep groan. All eyes are turned upon him, and Henry said in a voice most anxious inquiry, you have something to say, Mr. Marchdale? We shall throw some light upon this affair. No, nothing, said Mr. Marchdale, rousing himself at once from the appearance of depression that come over him. I have nothing to say, but I might think Fiona we'd better get some sleep if she can. No sleep for me, she said again, sweet Fiona. Dare I be alone to sleep. But you shall not be alone, dear Fiona, said Henry. I will sit by your bedside and watch you. She took his hand in both hers. While the tears traced each other down her cheeks, she said, promise me, Henry, by all your hopes of heaven, will you not leave me, I promise. She gently laid herself down with a deep sigh, closed her eyes. She is weak. I will not sleep long, said Mr. Marchdale. Your sigh, said Henry, some fearful thoughts, I feel certain, presses your heart. Shh, hush, hush. Mr. Marchdale, promise, Fiona Verona, hush, not here. Not here, I understand, said Henry. Let us sleep. There's a silence of some few moments, minutes duration. Fiona dropped into deep slumber. The silence was first broken by George, who said, Mr. Marchdale, look at the portrait. That portrait. Play the portrait, the frame, which we have allured. That moment, George looked, it sunk into the chair, and exclaimed, gracious heaven, look how like it is. Said Henry, those eyes, they see the contour of the countenance, the strange shape of the mouth. Is that picture shall be moved from here. The sight of it once as if it would awaken all other former terrors in poor Fiona's brain, if she should chance awaken, cast her eyes suddenly upon it. And it is so like him who came here, said the mother. He is a very man himself, said Mr. Marchdale. I have not seen it in this house long enough to ask any of you the portrait may be. It is, said Henry, the portrait of Ramgate Bannerworth, our ancestor of ours, whose first by his vices gave a great blow to the family prosperity. Indeed, how long ago? About 90 years. Many years? This is a long time, 90 years. He moves upon it. No, I do wish, and not yet I dread. What? To say something to you at all. But not here. We will hold a conversation matter tomorrow. Not now. Daybreak light is coming quickly on, said Henry. I shall keep my sacred promise of not moving from this room until Fiona awakens. There can be no occasion for detention of any of you. While it is significant that they are well, go, all of you, endeavour to procure what rest you can. I will fetch you my powder flask and bullets, said Mr. Marchdale. You can, if you please, reload the pistols in about 2 hours more. It'll be broad daylight. His arrangement was adopted. Henry did load the pistols and placed them on the table beside the bed, ready for immediate action. And then, Fiona was sleeping soundly, all left the room about himself. Mrs. Bannerworth was the last to do so. She would have remained, but for the earnest solicitation of Henry, that she should endeavour to get some sleep to make up for a broken night's repose. Indeed, so broken down by the alarm, Fiona's account, she had no power to resist, but with tears flowing from her eyes, she sought her own chamber, and now the calmness of night had resumed its sway in that evil, fainted mansion. Although no one really slept but Fiona, all was still busy thought, kept everyone else wakeful. It was a mockery to lie down at all, and he full of strange and fearful, painful feelings as he was. Preferred his present position, anxiety and preparation of Fiona's account, which he knew he should feel if she were not within the sphere of his owner's observation. He slept as soundly as some great gentle infant, tired of its playmates and its sports. Chapter 4. The morning, consolation, the fearful suggestion. What a wonderful different impressions and feelings with regard to the same circumstances come across the mind, broad, clear, beautiful, light as day. What halted the imagination, often rendered the judgment almost incapable of actions when a heavy shadow of night is upon all things. There must be a downright physical reason for this effect. It is so remarkable and so universal. It seems that the sun rays so completely alter and modify the constitution of the atmosphere that it produces as we inhale it, a wonderful different effect upon the nerves of the human subject. The account for this phenomenon in no other way, perhaps neither in his life had he, Henry Benworth, felt so strongly transition of feeling how he felt it. And a beautiful daylight gradually dawned upon him. He kept his lonely watch by the bedside of his slumbering sister. Watch had been a perfectly undisturbed one, but at least sight or sound of any intrusion had reached his senses, all had been still as a very grave. Yet while the land lasted, he was more indebted to the rays of the candle which he placed upon a shelf of pale, distinguished objects, than to light the morning, a thousand uneasy, strange sensations had found a home in his agitated blossom. He looked so many times at the portrait, which was in a panel at length, he felt some fine sensation of terror creep over him wherever he took his eyes off it. He tried to keep himself from looking at it. He found it in vain to adopt it, so he adopted what perhaps is certainly the wisest, best plan, namely to look at it continually. He shifted his chair so he could gaze upon it without any effort. He placed the candle so that the faint light was thrown upon it. There he sat to pray, many conflicting and uncomforting feelings, till the daylight began to make the final flame look dull and sickly. Solution of the events of the night, he could find none. He racked his imagination in vain, by some means, however, vague to endeavouring to account for what occurred, and still was his at fault. All was to him was wrapped in a gloom, most profound mystery. Now, strangely to the eyes of that portrait, appeared to look upon him, as if instinct with life, his head to which they belonged, was busy in endeavouring to find out secret communings of his soul. It was wonderfully well executed, that portrait, so lifelike, and the very features seemed as they gazed upon them. "It shall be removed," said Henry. "I shall move it now, but that it just seems absolutely painted on the panel. I should wait sooner in any attempt to do so." He rose and said that much was the case, that it would require workmen with proper tools adapted to the job to remove the portrait. "True," said he, "I might not have destroyed it, but it is a pity obscure work of such rather beautiful art as this is. I should take it myself if I were. It shall be moved to some other room in the house, wherever." Then all of a sudden I struck Henry how foolish it should be to remove the portrait, the wall which in all likelihood or night would be inhabitable, for it was not probable that Fiona would choose again to habit a chamber in which she had gone through such terror. "It could be left where it is," he said, "where you can fasten it up, if you please, even the very door of this room, so no one need terrible themselves any more, any further about it." The morning was coming now, coming fast. Just as Henry thought he would partly draw a blind with the window, in order to shield the direct rays of the sun and the eyes of Fiona, she woke. "Help, help," she cried, and Henry was by her side in a moment. "You're safe, Fiona, you're safe," he said. "Where is it now?" she said. "Where? What, dear?" "Dreadful apparition. Oh, what have I done to make this perpetually miserable?" "Think no more of it, Fiona. I must think. My brain is on fire. Millions of strange eyes seem gazing at me." "Great heavens," she raised, said Henry. "Hark, hark, he comes on the wings of storm. Oh, it's most terrible, horrible, horrible." Henry rang the bell, but not as if he loudly to create any alarm. A sound reached the walking ear, vacantly of his mother, the mother who in a few moments was in the room. "She is awoken," said Henry. "Spoken, but seems to me wonder, and discourse. Father, for God's sake, smooth her, and try to bring her mind around usual state." "I will, Henry, I will. Think, mother, if you were to get her out of this room, enter some chamber of her so far removed from this one as possible. It would tend to withdraw her mind from what has occurred. Yes, we should be done. Oh, Henry, what was it? What do you think it was? As I'm lost at sea, the whole conjecture, I can form no conclusion. Where is Mr. Marchdale? Leave in his chamber. I'll go and consult with him. Henry proceeded at once to the chamber, which is he knew was occupied by Mr. Marchdale. He crossed the corridor. He could not but pause a moment to glance a window at a face of nature. As often as the case of terrific storm of preceding evening, clear the air rendered it deliciously invigorating and lifelike. Where had been dull, and there had been for a few days, some days, certain heaviness and atmosphere, which is now entirely removed. Morning sun was shining with uncommonly brilliancy. Birds were singing in every tree and every bush. On every bush, the presence of spirit stirring, heaven, hills giving a morning. Seldom had he seen, and his effects upon his spirits was great, though not altogether what it might have been, had all gone on as it usually was in the habit of doing a house. The ordinary little tragedies of evil fortune, certainly from time to time, in shape of illness, one thing or another attacked the family of the Badenfords. In common with every other family, but here suddenly be risen of something once terrible and inexplicable. He found Mr. Larkstone up and dressed, apparently in deep, anxious thought. The moment he saw Henry, he said, Throne is awake, I assume. Yes, but mine appears to be much disturbed. From bodily weakness, I dare say. But why should she be boldly weak? She was strong and well as say, aye, as well as she'd ever been in all life. Glow of youth and health was on her cheeks. It's possible that in the course of one night she should have become worldly weak to such extent. Henry, said Mr. Marchdale, sadly, sit down, I am not, as you know, a superstitious man. Certainly not. And yet I never in my life was so utterly staggered as I have been by the occurrence of tonight. Say on, there is frightful, hideous solution of them, one which may every consideration would tend a strength to, one which I tremble to name. Now, though yesterday at this hour, I would have laughed at it to scorn. Indeed, yes, it is so. Tell one woman what I am about to say to you. Their dreadful search shall remain themselves alone, Henry Bannersworth. I am lost in wonder. You promise me? What? And you will not repeat my opinion of anyone. I do. On your honour, on my honour, I promise. Mr. Marchdale rose. Being in the door, he looked out, see if there were no listeners near. Having asserted that they were quite alone, he turned the drawing chair close to that on which Henry sat. He said, Henry, have you ever heard a strange and dreadful superstition which some countries dreaming rife, by which it's supposed that there are beings who never die? Never die? Never in the world, Henry. Have you heard of, I dread to pronounce the word, speak it, God of heaven, let me hear it, a vampire? Henry sprang to his feet, his whole frame quivered with emotion. The drops of perspiration stood over his brow as a strange hoarse voice repeated the words, a vampire? Even so, one who has to renew a dreadful existence by human blood, one who lives on forever, must keep up such a fearful resistance upon human gore. One who eats not and drinks not as other men, a vampire. Henry dropped into his seat and uttered a great groan, most exquisite for anguish. I don't call that groan, said Mr. Dale, but I am so thoroughly bewildered. I know not what to think. God, God, good God, do not too readily yield belief to dreadful superstition. I pray you, yield belief, exclaimed Henry. He rose and lifted up one of his hands above his head. Now, by heaven, great God of all, who there rules, I will not easily believe out so awful and so monstrous. Applaud your sentiment, Henry. Not willing would I deliver up to myself such frightful belief. Too horrible, I admit, have told you that of which mate you saw, but in my mind you have surely before heard of such things. I have. I am much marvelled then at superstition. This position did not occur to you, Henry. It did not. He did not march down. It was too dreadful, I suppose, to find a home. My heart, oh, Fiona, Fiona, this horrible idea should once occur to you. Reason cannot, I am quite sure, I hold you against it. Let no one presume to exaggerate it to her. Henry, I would not have it mentioned to her for worlds. Nor I, good God. I said it all at the very fault. Mere possibility that there is no possibility. There can be none. I will not believe it, nor I. No, by heaven's justice, goodness, grace, and mercy, I will not believe it. Tis well sworn, Henry, and now discarding superstition, if you have been visited by a vampire, I have seriously set about endeavouring, if we can, to account for what has happened in this house. I cannot now. Nay, let us explain the matter. If we can find any natural explanation, let us cling to that. Henry, as a sheet anchor of any our very souls. Do you think you're fertile in its appetites? Do you think march down for heaven's sake, for your sake and your own peace? Find out some way of accounting for what has happened when the hideous one you have suggested? Yet my pistol, but it's hurt him not. He has left the tokens of his presence on the neck of Fiona. Peace, oh peace, do not. I pray you, accumulate reasons why I should receive such a dismal, awful superstition. Oh, not Marchdale. You, as you love me, you know that my attachment to you, said Marchdale, has seen it yet. Heaven will help us. His voice was broken by grief as he spoke. He turned aside his head to hide bursting tears that would, despite all his efforts, now show themselves in his eyes. Marchdale and Henry, a pause of some moment's duration. I sit up tonight with my sister. Do think there's a chance it may come again? I cannot dare not speculate upon the coming of so dreadful a visitor. Henry, I hold watch with you most willingly. You will march down. My hand upon it. Come what dangers may, I will share them with you, Henry. Thousand thanks, safe and perfect. Then to him, George, of what we have been talking about. He is highly suspected of nature. The very idea of such a thing would kill him. I will be mute. Move your sister to some other chamber. Let me beg of you. Henry, that one, now inhabits, will always be suggestive of horrible thoughts. I will. That dreadful looking portrait, which is perfectly nice of him, who came last night, in perfect deed. You tend to remove it? I do not. I thought of doing so, but actually on a panel on the wall. I should not willingly destroy it, and may as well remind there. It is that chamber which I readily doubt, believe has come thenceforth to anyone in this house. It may well come such. Who comes here? And at a hero's step, the tip of the door this moment, George made his appearance and all answer the summons to come in. He looked pale and ill, his face betrayed how much he'd mentally suffered during that night, and almost directly got into the bedroom and said, I shall and shall be censured by you both of what I'm going to say, but I cannot help myself saying it. Nevertheless, to keep it to myself, destroy me. Good God, Judge. What is it, Mr. Markdale? Be it out, Henry. I've been thinking of what has occurred. It's all what thought had been one of the wildest superstitions that I ever had thought I should have entertained. Have you heard of vampire? Henry, just say it deeply, Marchdale was silent. I saw a vampire, said George, with much excitement in his manner. It's fearful, it's horrible superstition, but our poor dear Fiona had been visited by a vampire. I should go completely mad. He sat down, covered his face, his hands, he wept bitterly and abundantly. George, said Henry, when he saw that a frantic grief had in some measure abated. Be calm, George, and endeavour to listen to me. I hear Henry. Well, then, do not suppose that you are the only one in this house for whom a so dreadful superstition has occurred. Not only the only one. Now it's occurred to me much to do also. Gracious heaven, he has mentioned it to me. They both agreed to repudiate it with horror. To repudiate it? Yes, George, and yet, hush, hush, I know what you would say. You would tell us that our reputation of it cannot affect the fact of what they are aware, that we are aware. Yet all we believe in will be enough to drive us mad. What do you intend to do? Keep this superstition to ourselves. First place, the guard, and most zealously, for the ears of Fiona. Do you think she has ever heard of vampires? Ever heard of her mention? That's all the reading she had gathered, even a hint of such fearful superstition. If she has, we must be guided by circumstances, and we do best we can. Pray heaven she may not. Amen to that prayer, George, said Henry. Miss Rochdale, intend to keep watch of you tonight. May I not join you? Your health, dear George, will be not permit you to engage in such manners. Do you not seek a propose? Leave it to us to do the worst we can is most fearful and terrible emergency. As you please, brother, as you please, Mr. Marchdale. I know I am frail reed. My belief in that of this affair will kill me quite. Truth is, I'm horrified, utterly and frightfully horrified. Let me, like my form, put dear sister, don't believe you'll ever forgive me again. Do not fancy that, George, said Marchdale. You are very much aided to the use and needless, which might be our poor mother's potion. By allowing his circumstances so much to affect you, you have no affection for you, and let me, therefore, as an old friend of hers, entreat you to wear a cheerful respect as you can in her presence. Well, once in my life, said George sadly, I will to my dear mother endeavour to play the hypocrite. Do, said to Henry, a motive of such in each, so any such deceit as that. George, be assured. The day wore on, and poor Fiona remained in a very precarious situation. Not until midday that Henry made up his mind. He would call in a medical gentleman to her. He rode to the neighbouring market town, where he knew an extremely intelligent practitioner resided. If the gentleman Henry resolved upon a promise of secrecy, making confident of. But long before he reached him, he found he might well dispense promise of the secrecy. He had never thought so of gaze. He had been with other matters, the servants of what were considerate of the whole affair, and from them in no expectation of being able to keep the whole theory in all its details. The course, the opportunity for tale-bearing, gossiping were not likely to be lost, and while Henry was thinking over how he better act in the manner, the news that the throne of Bannerworth had been visited by night by vampire, those servants named the visitation such, once spreading all over the country. He rode along, Henry met a gentleman, of those people who belonged to the country, and who remained in his steed, said to him, Good morning, Mr. Bannerworth. Good morning, replied Henry. He would have ridden on, but the gentleman added, Excuse me for interrupting you, sir, but what is this strange story about everyone's mouth about a vampire? And he fell off his horse, so much astonished and bullying the animal around, he said, Is everybody's mouth? Yes, I've heard it from the least a dozen persons. You surprise me, it's untrue, of course. I'm not so absurd to really believe about a vampire, but there's no foundation at all for it. We generally find that at the bottom of these common reports, there's something around which, as nucleus, a world is formed. My sister is unwell. Ah, there's a law life really too bad. It's really too bad now. We had a visitor last night. A thief, I suppose, yes. I believe a thief. I do not believe it was a thief. And she was terrified, of course, upon such a thing of rage. A story of a vampire, as she marks of his teeth, being on his neck, and all the same credential and particulars. Yes, yes. Good morning, Mr. Bannerworth. Henry bade the gentleman good morning, and respects and publicity, which affair had already obtained. He set his spurs and his horse, determined we should speak to no one else upon his uncomfortable theme. Several attempts were made to stop him, but he only waved his hand and trotted on, nor did he pause in his speed till he reached the door. Mr. Chillingworth, a medical man whom he intended to consult. He knew that such a time he would be home, which was the case. As soon consulted with a man of drugs, Henry begged his patient hearing. With being accorded, he related to him at full length what happened, alone omitting the best of his remembrance, any one particular. When he concluded his narration, the doctor shifted the position several times and said, "That's all. Yes, enough too. More than enough, I shall say. My young friend, you astonish me. Can you inform a suspicious subject? No, not now. What is it? What is your own idea? Cannot be said to have one about it. But too sir, to tell you, my brother George is pressed, belief of vampire, that visited the house. Never in all my life heard of a more substantial narrative in favour of so hideous superstition. Well, but you can not believe. Believe what? A dead can come to life again? By such a process? Keep up with eternity? Do you take me for a fool? Certainly not. Then why do you ask such questions? For the glaring facts of the case. Don't care if you are 10 times more glaring. I don't believe it. I'd rather believe you were all mad. Whole family. And a full moon you were. You were all were a little cracked. And so would I. You go home now. I will call you and see your sister in the course of 2 hours. Something may turn up to throw some new light about the strange object. With this understanding, Henry went home. He took care to ride as fast as before in order to avoid questions. He got back to his old rental home by going for a disagreeable ordeal, having explained to anyone that had disturbed the peace of it. When Henry reached his house, he found that everything was rapidly coming on. Before he could permit himself to think upon any other subject, he inquired how his terrified sister passed the hours during his absence. He found that not only a little improvement had taken him into her as she occasionally slept, but awakened sleep concurrently. If it was a shock he received, had some serious effect upon her nerves. She appeared at once from room to room. And finding that she was awoken, again she leaned over and spoke tenderly to her. Fiona, he said, "Dear Fiona, you better now, Henry. Harry, is that you?" "Yes, dear. Oh, tell me, what has happened? Have you not ever touched Fiona?" Yes, Henry. But what was it?" "And none of them will tell me." "What was it, Henry?" "Be calm, dear. I no doubt some attempt to rock the house. Do you think you so?" "Yes, the bay window was particularly adapted for such a purpose. And now that you've moved here, this room, you'll be able to rest in peace. I shall die of terror, Henry. Even now, those eyes are glaring at me unceasingly. Oh, it's fearful. It's very fearful, Henry. Do not pity me. No one promised to remain with me at night." "Indeed, Fiona, you are mistaken. For I tend to sit by your bedside armed, as so reserved, you observe you know from all harm." He clenched his hand eagerly, and she said, "You will, Henry? You will not think it's much trouble, dear Henry?" "It could be no trouble, Fiona." "Then I shall rest in peace, for I know a dreadful vampire cannot come to me when you go by." "The what, Fiona?" "It's a vampire, Henry. It's a vampire. Good God, who told you so?" "No one have read of the book of them in a book of travels in Norway," said Miss with Mother Duke, with John Lenthal. Alas, groaned Henry, "discard. I pray you such a fault from your mind. Can we discard faults? What power have we but from the mind, which is ourselves?" True, hark. What noise is that? I thought I heard a noise, Henry. When you go, ring for someone first. There is but not a noise, it's actual shutting of some dear door, dear. What was that? I am relieved, Henry. I most fancy I'm entombed, and someone is feasting on my flesh. And does who say? And to those who would have lived, life have been turned by a vampire, because we can come themselves vampires, the same horrible taste of blood as I had before them. Is that not terrible? You can only vex yourself by such thoughts. Fair enemy, Mr. Cribbleworths is coming to see you. Can he minister to mind distress, disease? But yours is not, Fiona. Your mind is healthful. And so though this power extends to not so far, you thank heaven, dear Fiona, you that you need it not. She sighed deeply as she said, "Heaven help me. I do not, Henry. Dreadful thing being held by my hair. I must have had it all taken off. I tried to get away, but it dragged me back. A brutal thing it was, then, at that moment, Henry, I felt as if something strange took place in my brain. was going mad, saw the glade eyes close to mine, but a hot, pisterous wrath upon my face. Help, help, fish, hush my girl in the fuss, look at me. I am calm again, it sits its teeth in my throat. Did I faint anyway? You did, clear. But let me pray you to refer all this to the imagination, at least the greater part of it. But you saw it, yes. All saw it. We all saw some man, a housebreaker. It must have been some housebreaker. But that, what more easier, you know, dear Bruna, is soon some such disguise. Was it stolen? Not that I've known of. But there was an alarm, you know. Fiona shook her head as he said in a low voice, that which came here was more than mortal. Oh, Henry, if it had been not killed me, now I would have been happy. Happy. But I cannot live. I hear it breathing now. Tell us there's something else around Fiona. There's much distress to Henry. You'll make yourself much worse if you indulge yourself such strange fancies. Oh, what are they? They were fancies, but fancies. They are, believe me. The strange conclusion of my brain, when my brain sleep has owned me suddenly, then I suspected Henry. What was I? It shall never be again. Say not so, all this will pass away like a dream. Leaves have faint a trace upon his memory. A time will come with you to wonder if you ever made so deep an impression on your life. What are these words, Henry? She said, but you do not come from your heart. Oh no, who comes? The door was open, Mrs. Benningworth, who said. It's only me, my dear, Henry. This is Dr. Tillingworth in the dining room. Harry turned to Fiona, saying, will you see him, dear, Fiona? You know Mr. Tillingworth well. Yes, Mrs. Henry. Yes, I should meet see him whatever you please. Shoo, Mrs. Benningworth up, said Henry to the servant. A few moments, a medical man was in the room. He had at the most once approached the bedside to speak to Fiona, but on whose pale countenance he looked with very evident interest, which at the same time seemed a mingled, painful feeling. At least his face is indicated. Well, Mrs. Benningworth, he said, what is it all this I hear about, an ugly dream you had? A dream, said Fiona, as she fixed a bit of eyes in his face. Yes, I understand, she shuddered and was silent. Was it not a dream then, asked Mr. Tillingworth. He wrote her hand, she wrung her hands in a voice, dreaming anguish and faith, and said, could it have been, if it were a dream, would it have been, if it were a dream, if anyone could not convince me it was a dream. Well, will you tell me what it was? You, sir? Yes, sir, it was a vampire. Mrs. Tillingworth glanced angry. As he said in reply to Fiona's words, suppose that is, after all, another name, Fiona, a nightmare. No. Do you really then persist in believing anything so absurd, Miss Benningworth? What can I say to the evidence of my own senses? He replied, I saw it, Henry saw it, George saw it, saw Mrs. March now, my mother all saw it. They could not all be at the same time the victims of some delusion. Same delusion, how faintly can you speak? I am very faint and ill. Indeed, what wound is that on your neck? A wild expression came over the face of Fiona, so ironic an eruption of the muscles, coming on shuddering as if it's sudden peel. She had come over, the whole mass of blood took place. And she said, it's a mark left by the teeth of the vampire. A smile was forced upon the face of Mr. Tillingworth. Draw out the blind, the window, Miss Henry, she said, and let me examine this puncture, which your sister attaches so extraordinary a meaning. Blind was up, and a strong light was thrown into the room. For two minutes, Miss Tillingworth had totally examined the two small wounds on the neck of Fiona, took a powerful magnifying glass from his pocket, and looked at them through it, and after his examination, could it, he has said, they're very trifling wounds indeed. But how inflicted, he said, Henry, by some insect, I would say. It's probably it being a season for many six insects flown in the window. I know the motive, said Fiona, which prompts all these suggestions of the kind one. I ought to be the last to quarrel with it. But what I have seen, nothing can make me believe I saw not, unless I am at once or twice, when felt myself really mad. How do you feel in general health? Far from well, strange redness at times creeps over me. Even now I can feel it. He sank back into the pillars as he spoke and closed her eyes, deep sigh. The children reckoned Henry to come with him from the room. But Latter had promised that he would remain with Fiona, and Mr. Bennerworth had left the chamber because she was unable to control his feelings. He rang the bell and requested that his mother would come. She did so, and then Henry went down the stairs along with an uncle man, whose opinion he was certainly eager to be now made acquainted with. As soon as they were alone in the old-fashioned room, which is called the oak closet, Henry turned to Mr. Chillingworth and said, What now is your candid opinion, sir? Have you seen my sister? You have seen my sister, no strange and irrevocable evidence of something wrong I have. Until you can lead the truth, Miss Henry, I am sorely perplexed. I thought you would be. It is not often that a medical man likes to say so much, nor it is indeed more prudent that he should do so. But in this case I am much puzzled, I am contrary to all my notions by all such subjects. As wounds, what could you think of them? I know not what to think. I am completely puzzled with regards to them, but they do not really bear the resemblance being bites. They never really do. So far when they were actually in favour of the dreadful superstition which poor Fiona entertains, as far they could certainly are. I have no doubt the world would have been bites, but we not jump to conclusion the teeth which afflicted them were human. So strangely, the one which I feel is third, where it might give us all which was evenness, and indeed it gave me, but I said before, I will not let my judgment give fearful and degrading superstition, which all the surfaces of connected strange story would seem to really justify degrading superstition. To my mind, your sister seems to be labouring an effect of some neurotic. Indeed, yes, and this, he really has lost the quality of blood, which loss of this creased his last action sufficiently to produce a languor under which she now evidently labours. Oh, that I could believe, of Fiona's superstition. I am confident she has taken over Cotic. She did not do so in my by mistake. There is no drug of the sort in her house. Besides, she's not heedless by any means. I'm quite convinced she was not done so. I am fairly puzzled, my young friend. I can only say I could freely have given half of what I am worth to see that figure you saw last night. What would you have done? I would have left sight of its world's wealth. You would have felt your blood freeze with hot terror. The place was terrible. And yet it led me where it liked. I would have loved it. I wish you had been there. Here. I wish to be heaven I had. But if I know where there was the least chance of another with it, would come and wait patience every night for a month. I cannot say to believe. But Henry, I am going to sit up tonight with my sister. I believe our friend Mr. Marchdale will share my watch with me. Mr. Chittenworth appeared to be for a few moments lost in thought, and suddenly rousing himself as he found it even impossible to come to any rational conclusion upon the subject, he arrived at one which he chose to keep to himself and said, Well, we must leave the matter as present as it stands. Time may have accomplished something towards its development, but a present so palpable with mystery, I never come across or a matter at which human calculation so promptly foiled. Nor I. I will send you much medicines, such as I think be the service of Fiona. Depend upon seeing me at about 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. You have, of course, heard something. Send me to the doctor. He's pulling on those gloves. Vampires. I certainly have. I understand that in some countries, particularly Norway and Sweden, superstition is a very common one. And the vet. Yes, the girls are meant for tolerates. The same description of beings. All I ever heard of a European vampire made it being which can be killed, restored to life again by the rays of full moon, falling on the body. Yes, I've heard so much. Yet that's the hideous repast of blood that be taken away frequently. That if the vampire gets and not, if not he wastes away, he presented the appearance of one last stage of consumption, and visibly induced to speak, dying. As of what I have understood, tonight you do, you know, Mr. Bellingworth, is the full of the mood, and he startled. If you had succeeded in killing them, what I am saying, I believe I'm getting foolish. Horrible superstition beginning to fasten itself upon me as well as upon all of you. How strange is the fact we wage war with judgment in each such a way as this. A roll on the moon, repeated Henry, as he glanced towards the window. A night is near at hand. Banish those thoughts from your mind, said the doctor. Or else, my young friend, you'll make yourself decidedly ill. Good evening to you for this evening. I shall see you tomorrow morning. The Chillsworth appeared now, being anxious to go, and Henry no longer opposed his departure. But when he was gone, a sense of great loneliness came over him. Tonight, he repeated, is a fall on the moon. A strange and dreadful adventure should have taken place just the night before. Thus very strange, let me see. He took from the shelves a book, clothes of work from Fiona, and mentioned the title Travels in Venetway, which the work he found some accounts popular belief in vampires. He opened the work at random, and then some of the leaves turned over the eyes over of themselves, put in place the leaves of the book frequently do when it has been kept open a length of time, and apart the binding stretched there more than anywhere else. There's a note at the bottom of one of the pages of this part of the book. Henry read it as follows. In regard to those vampires, it's believed by those who inclined give credence to this dreadful superstition. They always endeavour to make their feast of blood revive all their bodily powers on some evening immediately preceding the full moon, because if any incident befell them, such as being shot or otherwise killed or wounded, they can never recover lying down somewhere where the moon wound rays shall fall upon them. Henry set the book down from his hands, a groan and a shudder.